Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Barbara Park, the current president. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, your sexual orientation, gender, or family structure, no matter your age, abilities, or inabilities. Later in the service, we're going to invite visitors, guests, or returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better if you're comfortable in doing that. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by Prairie members, a member of the wider community, or we're now recruiting a minister, but we don't have one yet. But when we do, the minister also presents. And this morning, we're going to have a panel of members who attended the General Assembly meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, General Assembly is the national gathering of Unitarian Universalists, which happens once a year and is quite as a large gathering. So we're looking forward to doing that. Now, Mary Franz is going to read our opening words, and these are by Patrick Murfin, who is a member of our church in Woodstock, Illinois.
We gather as leaders. We gather as leaders, as servants. We gather as ears, as voices. We gather as memory, as hope. We gather as faithful, as skeptics. We gather as objects, as subjects. We gather as wisdom, as folly. We gather as action, as reflection. We gather as many, as one. As we are, we shall be. As we serve, so shall we lead.
Sven and Ann Urbanski are going to light our chalice.
The chalice lighting words are also by Patrick Murfin. We believe that many streams join to make a river, that the way to wisdom lies in an open ear and heart, that goodness may be pursued for the sake of goodness and not from fear of punishment, that knowing and not knowing are part of the same, and ambiguity is permissible.
Now we're going to have a presentation talking about the General Assembly, and we have a panel who's going to come up here. There were five of us who got to attend General Assembly this year in Charlotte, and so we're going to try to share just a little bit of maybe the flavor of what we experienced, and we called the program Let's Agree to Disagree, because as the Zebra Stripes poem kind of pointed out, there's a lot of ways of looking at important issues, and that certainly comes out at General Assembly.
Okay. Phyllis and I had the privilege of being delegates at the assembly, and it was enormous. There were about 4,000 people there. That's a lot of people. And my first impression here was the front page of the Charlotte Observer. Here we are in great numbers, and you can pass that around and look at it a little closer. And I want to just give you the beginning of some of the story that was written. It went over two pages, and it was a really good story. Good and funny from our point of view. Liberal denomination stands up for its causes, the headline. First, they honored the imam who's in the middle of plans to build an Islamic power center near Ground Zero. Then they rallied in uptown Charlotte to support gays, lesbians, and same-sex marriage. And that was just in the first 48 hours or so after they got to town. Today, the country's most liberal collection of congregations, with no creed but a long history of social activism, is meeting this weekend in the Bible Belt, better known for a Christian church on nearly every corner. The 4,000 plus UUs, as they often call themselves, are in Charlotte from around the country to attend workshops, mingle with fellow delegates, listen to nationally renowned speakers, and stand up for their causes, especially the controversial ones. Okay, now, Marcia is going to tell us a little bit about this Charlotte in the Bible Belt, this Bible Belt city.
I'll have a little more to say about the Bible Belt aspect a little later on in the program, but I just wanted to say that a few of us, I think it was Barb and Christina and I, took a tour of the city, and during that time, a very brief tour, we were just on the bus and drove through various parts. It's a city that's both very modern, sophisticated, shows some sign of economic stress. There was a huge, I think it was a hotel that was just half finished because of lack of money. This kind of was an eyesore in the center of the city, but it looked like a burned out Hulk or something. But anyway, there were some beautiful parts of the city. Charlotte is a really pretty place with its parks. And we went through some very nice residential areas. And the cemeteries that go back so many years were so well kept. And now, the guide told us how the city was named. It was named after Queen Charlotte Sophia, and she was the wife of Britain's King George III, who ruled from 1760 to 1820. So he was the King Charles during King George during the American Revolution. Charlotte was born in Germany, and as many of the ancestors of the people in North Carolina were also born in Germany. So they, the inhabitants of North Carolina, had a affection for this queen, who was quite exceptional in her own way, a patron of the arts and a very wonderful person. When the city adopted the name Charlotte in 1762, this was because of the high regard for the queen that many of Charlotte's citizens felt. Now, others say it was just a move to gain favor with the king. It may have been a combination of both. Mecklenburg County, where Charlotte is, took the name of the region in Germany, Mecklenburg-Strelitz, where Charlotte was born.
Okay, thanks for a little bit of history here. I think I've never been there before, and I really know nothing about it, knew nothing about it. Now, just a few notes on what it's like to be in a plenary that encompasses probably about 4,000 people. That's a lot of people. Phyllis and I then were delegates, and the plenaries we had to, or tried to attend, were supersized, overlong, nitpicking, and often fascinating. So you can see where the agree to disagree comes from already in the plenaries. They were brought out and hashed out. Issues to be voted on were brought up by the Commission on Social Witness, Statement of Conscience, congregational study action issues and actions of immediate witness. So you can imagine to deal with these major organizations with thousands of people. So all you can do is hang in there and vote pro or con, hoping you fully understand what you're voting for or against. I'm talking about myself. Phyllis might have some different issues. Just one example, though, that I found that was very important, and it took 7 pages to be voted on by line almost. And that was an issue that we are all fairly familiar with. The issue was, just a minute, a draft for the social, statement of conscience on ethical eating and environmental issues. Now, this is something we've all, in small groups, have talked about a lot, and I think we're all familiar with. 7 pages, here are the sheets, to vote on nearly line by line. Now, thoughtful statements on issues most of us have long agreed with, especially if you have seen Michael Moore's film, Food, Inc. Michael Schuller was in support of the draft, very vocal and wonderful, articulate talk. But then, a voice that disagreed, convincingly and impassioned. A small business owner on food stamps, there are people like that, who raised the issue of ethical eating and poverty. 40% of American children malnourished. How ethical is that? So he focused on those very important things. And I ultimately voted, even though I love everything Michael Schuller does, but in this case I voted with the con man, albeit a bit hesitantly. That's kind of a cheap joke. A bit hesitantly, but I really, those of you who know me know I'm very much concerned with the political matters here. Now, I have focused on process here. The process, 4 days of these huge plenaries and meetings, rather than content, to underline the growing complaints, especially among young people, about the increasing overkill of the UU process. What's really going on in our UU world is reflected in the workshops. All 316 of them at this meeting, 316 workshops. And a quick overview of titles and brief announcements reveals a definite move or turn towards experiences, hands-on work, in the presence, looking to possibilities of the future. The future like the millennium, Christina?
Yeah. Okay, well, I'd like to talk today about an extremely well-attended two-part presentation delivered by Reverend Dr. Galen Gingrich, not related to Newt Gingrich, he made a point of saying, who is a senior minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in Manhattan. Marcia was there. You were there too, right?
The first one.
Yeah, the first one. Mm-hmm. So it was a massively attended. Hundreds of people were there. Dr. Gingrich graduated first in his class from Princeton Theological Seminary in 1985 and received a PhD from the University of Chicago in 2004. This is my statement, he's smart, he's articulate, and he has a point of view. His presentation was important, and it gave me a lot to think about, and what follows is my best attempt to condense his 2-hour presentation into 5 minutes. So, the words are his. Reverend Gingrich delivered his presentation under the title, The Church of the New Millennium. The first presentation carried the provocative title, A Formula for Failure, while the second was entitled, A Scenario for Success. Mm-hmm. So let's get into it. So why a formula for failure? 50 years ago, on May 15th, 1961, the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church of America merged to form the Unitarian Universalist Association. Nearly a century in the making, this union of kindred theological spirits symbolized the expansive promise of a free faith. So how is it going? Not so well. There are about as many UUs in our nation today as there were in 1961. Considering that the U.S. population has increased by more than 50% in that amount of time, simple math tells us that our numbers have fallen sharply, and in the last 2 years, I believe there have been published numbers that the sharpness is increasing. So who cares? Why does this matter? Paul Tillich called 1950s America the age of anxiety. If anything, that anxiety and absence of meaning are just as prevalent today, if not more so, than in the 1950s. When people ask how to live a life of meaning and purpose, they are asking a religious question. And it's one that Unitarian Universalists, all of you, are uniquely equipped to answer. Consider these lyrics from Green Day, just on a side comment. He used quite a number of videos, modern music, that really inspired me. And Green Day, has anyone heard of Green Day? Yeah, yes. They're a fabulous group. These are a subset of their lyrics from The Boulevard of Broken Dreams, one of their most famous songs. I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's only me. I walk alone. I walk this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams when the city sleeps, and I'm the only one, and I walk alone. My shadow's the only one that walks beside me. My shallow heart's the only thing that's beating. Sometimes I wish someone out there will find me. Till then, I walk alone. I'd like to share this quote directly from Dr. Gingrich's talk. What keeps me awake at night is wondering whether Unitarian Universalists can develop a unified sense of our religious mission and build strong institutions to pursue it. There are many practitioners of religion who use faith not to enlighten, but to enslave. They are turning back the clock on the basic tenets of civilization itself, such as reason, knowledge, personal liberty, and human dignity. As Unitarian Universalists, we have the capacity to transform how people understand and experience religion in the modern world. Once freed from belief in the magical, religion can actually become meaningful. I believe our mission in life, should we choose to accept it, is to save the world from their retrograde zeal and reclaim religion for people who live in the modern world. End quote. In other words, we will fail if we are spiritual but not religious. When people say they are spiritual but not religious, they usually mean they tend to embrace certain kinds of personal experience but reject religious dogma and religious institutions. They do this for a good reason, since religious dogma and institutions stand in the way of a spiritual experience, oftentimes. But liberal tradition insists that religion is not a set of beliefs, but rather a way of life. Religion is sacred spaces where we find refuge. Religion is music to gladden our spirits, stories to restore our courage, and daily rituals to renew resolve. Religion happens within a community. If we never become religious, our spirituality may nourish us as individuals, but it's unlikely to nourish those around us. If we are spiritual but not religious, our way of life will fade into oblivion. Religious communities need to develop a unique identity and distinctive way of life. What is our unique identity and distinctive way of life as Unitarian Universalists? The challenge of Unitarian Universalists as a denomination is our tendency to think and act as though we are each a religion unto ourselves. in order to meet our mission in life, which I'll repeat from above, save the world from retrograde zeal and belief in the magical, to reclaim religion for people who seek purpose in a modern world, we as UUs need to have more in common, both as individuals within a congregation and as congregations within a denomination. Can we forge a commitment to become more than we are today?
Christina, you really did a very difficult task to cull the most important thing. No, at this point, I haven't heard her talk before because we had a meeting. She didn't have time to come. But I'm almost embarrassed to voice any kind of disagreement there. And maybe it's just because I'm sometimes a cantankerous person. But this is really wonderful what you brought out of these two sermons, because I heard a lot of this going to many little workshops, and especially people of color and African Americans and young people voiced the core concepts there. My slight disagreement as an old academic, typical, I had a slight disagreement about the enthusiastic reception of Gingrich's visual aids. The man is a gifted speaker, truly gifted speaker, and he's in love with his own rhetoric. And his visual metaphors were often beautiful and convincing, if ultimately overused, in my opinion. And he completely lost me with his UU dream video, which to me was pure kitsch. But when I told this to Christina, she told me what I didn't know. She told me the name of the group that was, and I guess she and a lot of the young people know that. So sometimes the agree to disagree thing has to go on between generations too.
Well, that's why I like Prairie. You know? I'm the young person at Prairie.
That's right. Yeah.
And by the way, the video that I think you are referring to was We Believe in a Better Way. I can't remember the name of the artist, but it's very much a powerful fist raise, we believe in a better way sort of.
Well, she's the young person and I'm the old cynic, you know. Here we go. So that's enough of that. So I hope you got a little bit of an overview here, an idea of the big meetings and this very important thing that Christina just talked about. Marcia, you were going to tell us something different yet about the meetings. Well, your turn.
Yeah, one of the best sessions that I attended was called Turn the World Around, The South Can Lead Us, presented by the Southland region of the UUA. Now, the Southland region represents the rural areas, the smaller communities, the smaller fellowships and churches in North Carolina. Now, their idea was to present kind of a sample service of UU of the UU fellowship that retained the flavor of the Southern culture, the Southern culture way. So this was a very spirited hour, emulating a Bible-built UU service, mm-hmm. complete with foot-stomping guitar music and singers that let it all hang out, and energetic preaching and interludes called testimonials that had a fair resemblance to our joys and sorrows. Well, my favorite testimonial was from a church board member who felt that the UU church announcement in the local paper should specify a welcoming policy for LGBTs. Well, the day the announcement appeared in the paper, she got a phone call from someone with a thick Southern accent, which exists down there, asking in an accusatory manner, "Do you believe in homosexuality?" And she answered, "Believe in it? I've seen it."
Okay. Now, Phyllis, the other delegate, You wrote a very good overview of what you've enjoyed.
I went to a number of meetings besides what I have here, but these were the four that stand out for me. The first was the Ware Lecture given by Karen Armstrong. She spoke about the need for compassion in our world and made an excellent case for how more compassion among all peoples of all nations would make the world a much better place for all of us. She cited examples throughout history of how compassion could change events. All religions have within their scriptures a version of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. She cited examples from various religions to prove this case. Ms. Armstrong has recently become the recipient of a $100,000 grant from a private nonprofit to help further her work on compassion worldwide. And she has assembled a group of religious leaders of many faiths who are working with her to further the goal. Now, the second lecture was one given by Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf. The Imam told us about Cordoba, a place in Spain where Muslims, Christians, and Jews lived peacefully together in the 15th and 16th centuries. Imam Rauf is the inspiration behind the proposed Interfaith Center near Ground Zero in New York City, which is to be called Cordoba House. He also spoke about the spreading movement toward freedom that is occurring throughout the Muslim world. He addressed the importance of supporting institutions that promote democracy. As it states in the foreword to his book, What's Right with Islam, we need to cultivate a more just and balanced view of Islam. He said we need a coalition of moderates to dispel what some in the media and extremists say about Islam. At the GA, the Imam and his wife Daisy were presented with the Eleanor Roosevelt Award given by the UUSC. The third item was a dinner I attended sponsored by the Unitarian Universalists for Justice in the Middle East, the UUJME. This organization has a yearly sermon contest. The dinner speaker was the current contest winner. Her name is Hanan Watson, and she's with All Souls Church in New York City. Her sermon was titled, Waking Up to Shatter the Silence. It addressed the issue, why are UU congregations reluctant to discuss the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and how can they overcome this resistance to help our faith community contribute more meaningfully to the cause of peace and justice for Israelis and Palestinians. She is a Palestinian American who was born in Jerusalem. The fourth item was a film presented by the UUJME entitled Boudris. The film was made in Palestine and was filmed by an Israeli filmmaker from Just Vision. And you'll hear more about that from Rosemarie. Now, I just brought with me, in case anyone wants to see it, this is a flyer about Just Vision. And I also bought this book by Karen Armstrong, 12 Steps to Compassion, and this one written by the Imam, What's Right with Islam. So if any of you want to take a look at it after, you're welcome to do so.
Thanks. I also attended this dinner, and then came Boudris. We both watched this movie, Boudris, which I spontaneously bought. It's a CD. It was powerful, moving, and extremely necessary. Now, this is a film, and I hope to show this at Prairie and other groups. I promise it will move you, anger you, and motivate you to action. And interestingly, just now we know in the news that Palestine wants to get into the UN. And our president, as well, by the way, the German chancellor, are going to veto that, which I think is terrible. Now, sponsored by UUJME, the Unitarian Universalists for Justice in the Middle East. I have a little flyer here. This film is a documentary produced by Just Vision, and that's an organization founded in 2003. It is led by a team of Palestinian, Israeli, North and South American journalists, filmmakers, conflict resolution facilitators, and human rights advocates. So, you know, a heavy dose of progressives. It wants to generate greater awareness and support for Palestinians and Israelis working for non-violent solutions to the conflict. This, it's a documentary film. It's in the form of a film, but it is a documentary. Follows the progress of a non-violent protest movement staged by the people of Budrus, a Palestinian village in the occupied West Bank. These people are in opposition to the construction of Israel's separation wall, the infamous separation wall. The Israeli plan to route the wall through Budrus would have separated villagers from their olive groves and livelihood. But the Israeli army did not expect the people of Budrus to stand up to them in a desperate but nonviolent attempt to save their village. Their protest plan ultimately succeeds through the courageous and intelligent actions of the 15-year-old daughter of the community organizer of Budrus. And I'll promise you will fall in love with this young woman, don't you think? She's fabulous. The New York Times called Budrus the must-see documentary of the year, and it gathered 8 different prizes and honors from important organizations. I hope to show this film at Prairie and other groups this fall, and Nick is going to talk about it tomorrow at the program committee to see whether we want to show it at night or after church at one point. It's a full, it can be a somewhat shortened 52-minute shortened version or the full-length movie. So you can think about that right now. But recommended is Budrus, which is most up-to-date. The problem is most up-to-date. And we both highly recommend it, don't we? Okay, and now music, which was such a wonderful part of the meeting.
Well, I spent a great deal of time at GA on music because I sang in 2 separate choirs and I attended sessions on music. The upside of that was that I brought music, several pieces back for our choir, and of course it was wonderful to sing in these groups. The downside was that I didn't attend a broad variety of sessions, as the other people got to do. One of the music sessions that I went to was an introduction to our new Spanish language hymn book, and I picked up a copy. And we'll be working on songs from this over the course of the next year, because the next General Assembly is going to be in Phoenix, Arizona, and will focus on immigration. And I'm sure that at that GA, they'll be singing lots of things from this in Spanish. So I'm going to prepare us for that by picking out some things from here that we will learn as a congregation, that the choir will learn perhaps to sing for you. I'm going to have to bone up on my Spanish, which is virtually non-existent. So I have people who speak Spanish who in the choir who will help me with this.
But maybe I can add to what you're asking about. In these various workshops I attended, more and more this matter of not having enough African Americans, Hispanics, and so forth, in general, being paid attention to. And I think this whole issue that has to do with immigration also will be focused on quite well. And especially the young people. And there were I noticed very definitely, more young people and more people of color and different, Hispanics and so forth. So I think this trend is going to grow. Those were some of the best workshops I attended. No, but it's something that's inherent, you know. You didn't ask that specifically, I know that.
Thank you, fellow panelists.
I have a couple of Boudreaux flyers here just for interest, and then we'll find out when we'll have film, if anybody wants to pick this up.
The closing words today are by Robert Weston. Cherish your doubts, for doubt is the attendant of truth. Greet your neighbor and join us for Soup Sunday. There's soup and salad and bread, and we're having ice cream for dessert.